This is 5 o'clock shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network. I'm Robert Knight in New York, and today we continue our coverage of the content and implications of the Occupy Wall Street movement and the kindred organizations that are taking place all across the country and around the world. And we are honored to have as our first guest on this subject the veteran New York Times reporter Chris Hedges, who has himself spent time at the Occupy Wall Street location. Welcome to 5 o'clock shadow, sir.
Thank you.
What brought you there and what did you find?
Well, the whole theme of my books, Empire of Illusion, Death of the Liberal Class, has been that the system is broken, that the traditional mechanisms for incremental and piecemeal reform no longer work, that we have to step outside the system through nonviolence and directly confront the Leviathan of the corporate state, because at this point we live in a system of unfettered, unregulated capitalism, which is, Karl Marx correctly understood, is a revolutionary force. It turns everything into a commodity. Human beings become commodities. The natural world becomes a commodity that you exploit until exhaustion or collapse. And the assault on the ecosystem is as devastating as the reconfiguration of the United States into a form of neo-feudalism. And there are no impediments left. The Democratic Party is not going to save us. The judiciary is not going to save us. Electoral politics no longer works. And the people who have formed this amazing movement down on Wall Street get it. They are as savvy in terms of their technical ability to social network as they are in terms of their political judgment.
I'm taken by one of your recent comments or writings on this very subject. You say the real radicals have seized power and they are decimating all impediments to the creation of a neo-feudalistic corporate state, one in which there is a rapacious oligarchic class, a thin managerial elite, and two-thirds of this country live in conditions that increasingly push families to subsistence level. Tell us now why the proximity to Wall Street is important. How does what goes on inside these office buildings contribute to what you just described there?
Well, I mean, the short answer is there is no way in the American political system to vote against the interests of Goldman Sachs. And these corporations know only one word, and that's more. They are completely divorced, or certainly the hierarchy of these corporations are completely divorced from the day-to-day reality of the ordinary citizen. And the suffering that is being meted out to the working class, the poor, and increasingly the middle class has become draconian. I mean, the figures don't begin to, I think, explicate what this means for children and for families, but 47 million Americans living in poverty, tens of millions of Americans in a category called near poverty, real unemployment, and by that I mean people who have either stopped looking for work or have poorly paid part-time jobs. And, of course, most workers at places like Walmart only work 28 hours a week, which puts them below the poverty line, is somewhere between 17 and 20%. And both the Democratic and Republican parties are completely captive to these corporate powers, as the Obama administration has amply illustrated, despite the rhetoric, including the recent populist rhetoric that is once again being resurrected by the Obama political machine. The reality is that they have a kind of death grip, and there's been no sort of financial regulation. There has been an assault on the most basic services. Libraries are being closed. Fire departments are being shut down. Police are being laid off. Teachers are being laid off. I just came back from South Dakota. They're talking about school children in some districts only going to school for 4 days a week, the overreach of the imperial empire, which, of course, is for a small, select group of corporations, a business. I mean, they make tremendous profits on it, is hollowing the country out from the inside. So these organizers down in the financial district, they understand who the enemy is, and they've been criticized for not having specific demands. I don't think that's correct. I think, in fact, they're quite astute not to list, campaign finance for interests or removing personhood for corporations, because to do so is to appeal to a legislative and judicial process that doesn't work. We have to confront the totality of the corporate state, and that's what they're doing.
This is different from the petitioning legislators, the writing letters to Congress and such, particularly in the tremendous giveaways and supports for improper industries that would have failed, the bailouts that are on the order of hundreds of billions, perhaps trillions. And I'm wondering how that cycle of conspiracy between the legislative and executive branch can be broken through these protests.
Well, these protests hopefully become the spark by which you ignite popular discontent. They call themselves the 99 percenters. The fact is, the vast majority of Americans, even those in the middle class, are suffering from the distortion of the American political and economic system that serves corporate interests that are supranational. They have no loyalty to the nation state. So they'll literally dismantle manufacturing factories in Ohio, move them to Mexico, and now we see large-scale factory closures over the border in Mexico as they pack up and leave for the cut-rate embrace of China's totalitarian capitalism. They talk about making the American worker competitive. What they're really saying is that they have to be competitive with prison labor in countries like China. It is a race to the bottom. I just came back from Immokalee, Florida, where the Coalition of Immokalee Workers are organizing a campaign against Trader Joe's and Giant and other supermarkets to increase the wages of these agricultural workers who make between $8,000 and $10,000 a year. Immokalee is the future. That's where they want to reduce most of us to. And in fact, they will at this point unless we stand up and stop them.
Chris, you mentioned that you've been traveling across this country, and simultaneous with the Wall Street occupation, there are springing up almost by the day local occupation movements, sometimes as few as two or three people, others growing with great rapidity. In your travels, do you see a parallel to people organizing as with these occupations?
Well, if this isn't the spark is coming because the tinder is there. I've covered popular uprisings all around the world, in Belgrade, the two intifadas against the Israeli occupation. You never know what it is that triggers it. It often is benign. One of the most instructive lessons for me, I covered the collapse of East Germany, was spending the afternoon with the leaders of the resistance movement in Leipzig and on November 9th, 1989, and they were talking about how maybe within a year there would be free passage back and forth across the Berlin Wall. A few hours later, the Berlin Wall didn't exist, certainly not as an impediment to the movement of people. Even they didn't know. Let's hope this is the spark. I think it does have the potential to be the spark. But if this isn't it, it's coming. And these people who are down there in the renamed Liberty Plaza are lighting the way.
If this is a spark, Chris, because of your astute analyses, I'd like to ask you, are there dangers of there being flame retardants to this spark? And by that I mean, tactically speaking, let's just take a look at that for a moment. Much of the protest and instantaneous communication is based on what is called social networking media, Facebook and email accounts like Yahoo, which was implicated by Truth Dig at the beginning of this protest as flagging Occupy Wall Street messages as spam and thereby not letting them get through for a while. We know that with the legislative process that the Judiciary Committee, a subcommittee of the Judiciary Committee has voted to maintain internet records. The internet kill syndrome, whether it's a literal splitting of the spine of the internet or whether it is selective prevention of messages that are indicated with keywords. Do you think that we have not yet seen the full force of the government in suppressing the electronic community of this movement?
Well, of course we haven't seen the full force. And if this uprising, if that's the proper word for it, grows, they will use greater and greater forms of control, as we saw in Egypt, for instance. But I think that it's probably too late. One of the things that has been particularly laudatory about this movement is that they've created their own media. It was they who captured the pepper spraying of these women, not anybody in the commercial or the mainstream media. And they were very quick about disseminating it. And I think that that parallels the kinds of tech-savvy movements that we saw in the Middle East. And they really shamed. I mean, I was there on Sunday, and they really shamed the New York City Police Department. They've had to back off because of that. And the outrage over this really unprovoked and brutal attack by Anthony Bologna, a police inspector, is one that is, you know, an example of what nonviolent resistance can do. And yes, of course, we haven't seen the full force of the security and surveillance state brought down on them, and they have a lot of tricks they can pull out of their bag. But I would say that you know, these people are very frightened. I'm talking about the power elite, and they're confused. They understand far better than you and I do how utterly rotten and corrupt and gamed the system is. And there's a kind of fragility to those kinds of structures because, in the end, they're illegitimate. I mean, let's go back to the point you made before. In traditional language, a conservative is someone who calls for the rule of law. In the perversion of, to use Sheldon Wolin's term, our inverted totalitarianism, it's those political pariahs who are calling for the rule of law, and it's the real radicals who have trashed, manipulated, and gamed the legal system to carry out crimes. I mean, what Goldman Sachs does is a crime. But, of course, nobody on Wall Street is held accountable. The only person who goes to jail is Bernie Madoff, and that's because he stole from rich people.
Chris Hedges, it is really a revelation. One other side of just the caution that I bring to this moment of hope is the human interaction. You make an excellent point about the potency of passive nonviolent resistance to an evil state of affairs. And there are ancient tricks that Caesar, that the establishmentarian powers would use, including infiltration, provocateurism, espionage, informants, and so on. How well protected or how safe do you think the movement is from that?
There are police undercover informants within the protest movement. They're easily recognizable because they keep running around asking, "Who's your leader? Who's your leader?" In fact, the movement is completely transparent. That's what's driving them crazy. It doesn't have a hierarchical structure. Mm-hmm. What they seek to do is decapitate it. They don't understand a movement like this. It's not a language they speak. It's not a language they understand. And, I mean, these guys in sort of New York Yankees baseball caps who look like cops, smell like cops, look, you know, talk like cops, and run around and say they're college students, but they forgot to bring their ID. It's almost farcical. I mean, the moment they walk into the plaza, everybody knows who they are. Because that's their obsession. The leadership, who would you say is running this? And nobody's running it. Everybody's running it. And not only that, it's every single decision is done in a general assembly that is then, through the people's microphone, because they took away their bullhorns, repeated by the crowd. These poor, undercover policemen, I think, are just utterly confused.
They are literally aliens saying, "Take me to your leader," huh?
Well, that's the obsession they have, and that is the, you know, almost instantaneous tip-off as to who they are.
Chris Hedges, you have written about the wider social implications of that which this represents, particularly in the death of the middle, the death of the liberal class. What are your current projects?
Well, I'm finishing a book with the great graphic illustrator Joe Sacco, where we go to the poorest pockets of the United States, Camden, New Jersey, the coal fields of southern West Virginia, Pine Ridge, South Dakota, and then the agricultural workers in the tomato fields in Florida, where, of course, collective bargaining is illegal, to write a book about unfettered capitalism, what it looks like. Here's what happens when the marketplace rules. Here's what it does to communities, to individuals, to societies, and here's what they want to do to you.
And as a final reflection, Chris Hedges, what do you think the next thresholds of this movement might be? Which milestones will indicate the avalanche effect of ordinary people in the Midwest, people in the suburbs or in the inner cities, really catching on and having a simultaneous mentation for serious and measurable change? What do you see unfolding in the coming weeks, months, or years?
If the New York City police were to walk in tonight and shut this down, these protesters would still win. Because what they've done is inculcate within the DNA of hundreds of people, probably a few thousand people, another way of organizing, another way of relating, another way of thinking, and most importantly, a kind of community, a kind of solidarity. They've shattered the fear. They've shattered the isolation. And I think that is one of the reasons why this is an incredibly significant, perhaps even monumental step in the return of our nation to sanity.
Chris, I want to tell you it's been a great honor to have you with us here today. The clarity and the vigor of your words has been an inspiration to me for a long time. And where can people follow your work?
I don't have a website. I don't do a blog. I do a column every Monday for Robert Scheer's website, Truth Dig, and I write books.
Well, you also do good work, and you're a great observer. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
This is 5 O'Clock Shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network, originating at WBAI. I'm Robert Knight in New York.